Coming up on the 21st, Illinois residents are taking action to try to stop construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline that would transport crude oil from North Dakota to Illinois. A rally planned in Champaign hopes to bring attention to the fact that there are still indigenous people in Illinois who stand in solidarity with tribes in North Dakota.
There's no reservation in Illinois. You know, the tribes all left. They're relocated to other states. It can make it tricky to remember that this was a homeland to a lot of indigenous people, and there was a lot of fighting and controversy that happened that made them leave.
Plus, we look at what it takes to feed college athletes with a former University of Illinois quarterback and sports nutrition experts from Northwestern and Illinois states. And we'll hear from the Urbana band The Fights about their new record, Bramble Patch Blues. I'm Brian Moline, in for Nyla Boodoo. That's all coming up on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Moline, sitting in once again for Nyla Boodoo. Opposition to the Dakota Access Pipeline has been growing in recent weeks. That's the crude oil pipeline that would cut through four states, including Illinois, where it would pass through 12 counties before ending in Patoka in southern Illinois. We're joined on the phone by Jason Parrott, Southeast Iowa News correspondent for Tri-States Public Radio, who's been reporting on how this issue is impacting the Tri-States area in northwest Illinois and southeast Iowa. Jason, welcome to the 21st.
Well, thanks for having me, Brian.
You're welcome. Can you get us up to speed on what this issue is all about?
Well, in 2014, as you mentioned, a company called Energy Transfer Partners out of Texas announced that they wanted to build a pipeline from the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota to southern Illinois, Patoka, Illinois. And it's going to cross through, as you mentioned, the four states. It's going to bring about 500,000 barrels of crude oil a day from North Dakota to Illinois. It's about nearly a $4 billion project. As it was announced in 2014, it was supposed to actually be finished up before the end of this year, but because of delays with permitting and such, it's unclear when the pipeline might be completed. It's going to run about 1,200 miles. And right now it's the target of protests throughout the route of it.
Sure, we've seen those reports in recent weeks about protesters and journalists in North Dakota being arrested for allegedly trespassing, most notably Amy Goodman of Democracy Now, who says she was exercising the right to freedom of the press. Where you are in southeast Iowa, some people have been stepping up to take action against the pipeline as well. What's happening there?
In southeast Iowa, previous to maybe the last month or so, it was a lot of behind the scenes. People had vocally said that they were against it, but there weren't any protests and stuff. Landowners were fighting over the use of eminent domain, and people were just letting their voices be known on social media and such. A couple of weeks ago, a woman by the name of Jessica Resnicek, who is from Des Moines, arrived in Lee County, and immediately after she arrived, she was arrested. Basically, on consecutive days, she used tires to block a site to one of the construction sites, and she was arrested for basically interfering with official acts, was released from jail the very next day, came back, set up her blockade again, was arrested again, and then she worked with the local sheriff's office, and she set up an encampment, and that encampment has been in place for about 2 weeks now, where she has 24/7 been outside protesting at the site of basically where the pipeline will cross underneath the Mississippi River in Lee County, Iowa, and feed into Hancock County into western Illinois.
Very good. Meanwhile, here in East Central Illinois, residents are also organizing to voice their opposition to the Dakota Access Pipeline. A rally taking place tonight at Scott Park in Champaign calls on community members to stand in solidarity with Standing Rock Sioux Nation. We're joined now by the organizer of that rally, Kate Insolia. Kate, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you.
What message are you hoping to convey at the rally tonight?
We're hoping to, one, stand in solidarity with Standing Rock so that what they're doing right now is visible to the public and to people all over our town and the nation. Secondly, to stop the pipeline to protect our water, because water is essential for living. And as you see, pipelines break and they cause havoc and ruin life. And so to stop the pipeline, protect our water. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, to bring acknowledgement to the fact that Indigenous people are alive. They're not from the past. We live here in Illinois. The rally is Indigenous-led, and we've been planning it with Native folks from the area, most of whom aren't Indigenous to this land, but from other tribal nations.
Sure. Who are some of the people that will be speaking tonight?
Jamie Singsong, Beverly Smith, folks from Prairie Rivers Network, and a bunch of young adults from the university that are part of the Native American group there.
And you will be speaking as well?
Yes, I will be.
Okay, very good. What will your message be tonight?
My message, well, my mom's side of the family is Lakota Indian from the Lower Brew area in South Dakota. So, you know, it's very close to my heart. My message is that this isn't the time for us to be silent. This is the time for us to gather together. And we get to, it's an incredible opportunity for us to think about caring for the environment and thinking about Native people and what's really happening here in the United States and what our relationships are like with Indigenous people, and to become more knowledgeable and step out of numbness and start moving in the direction of taking action.
Sure. Yeah. Again, that rally is happening at Scott Park in Champaign tonight. Jason, back to you for just a moment. The most recent reports I've seen are saying the construction of the 1,200-mile pipeline is about 60% complete. What impact do you expect the efforts to oppose the pipeline and construction in Illinois and Iowa will ultimately have?
Well, it's as I mentioned with Jessica Resnicek, I asked her that question, and she said she's the eternal optimist. She said that she hopes that as more and more people show up that they'll be able to halt construction. Construction is continuing here in Iowa, and the group who is protesting outside of the construction site actually tomorrow plans to do an act of civil disobedience. They plan to try to block roadways and sit in front of machinery to try to see if they can stop construction for that day. And it's one of the cases where they want to be arrested. They know they're going to be arrested. They've even been working with the local sheriff's office to coordinate to make sure this will be a peaceful protest. We would just like to exercise our right to protest. We know we'll be trespassing. We know we'll be arrested. But they're coordinating to make sure that there are no incidents and keeping everybody safe.
And Kate, what would you ultimately like to see happen here?
The pipeline to stop. And for everyone to have a deeper connection to water, something that Indigenous people have been honoring for thousands of years.
Kate Insolia, organizer of the rally tonight at Scott Park in Champaign, thank you for joining us today on the 21st.
Thank you so much.
And Jason Parrott, reporter with Tri-States Public Radio based in Southeast Iowa. Jason, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Brian.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the 21st, we'll switch gears a little bit and talk about sports nutrition. We'll first hear from a quarterback, then some sports nutrition experts. Stay tuned. That's coming up on the 21st. For many, sports on college campuses extend to only what they see on the field, but for student athletes, food and nutrition are as much a part of the program as the games. That role has grown even more in recent years. In 2014, the NCAA ruled that Division I student athletes can receive unlimited meals and snacks in conjunction with their athletics participation. With all that food comes dietitians and nutritionists to help athletes get the most out of their bodies. Joining us on the phone now is former University of Illinois quarterback Riley O'Toole. He passed for over 2,300 yards and 18 touchdowns during four seasons with the Illini from 2011 to 2014. He's on the line from Wheaton. Riley, thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Do you remember the first time you realized that things were pretty serious when it came to food here at the University of Illinois?
Probably within my first week on campus when we had weigh-ins and body fat percentage and all that kind of stuff, and I was a little chubby my freshman year.
Well, yeah, how would you assess where your nutrition level was when you first got to college?
I didn't really have any knowledge on it. I mean, obviously, you know what kind of bad food is and all that kind of stuff, but just knowing what to eat, when to eat, stuff like that, and I really had no prior knowledge to get into college.
And I know that, you know, while you were here, you guys would sometimes get Papa John's pizzas after the game, things like that. What kind of balance did you have while you were a student athlete here at Illinois between fast food, junk food versus eating healthy?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, during my first 3 years, they didn't have that rule where athletes could get 3 meals per day. So when I was there, we would just get that one dinner a night. So the meals in the morning, you kind of have to figure out whether it's just getting snacks that they had before you lift in the morning at the stadium, which wouldn't fill you up all that much, or at lunchtime, just in between classes and meetings and that kind of stuff. Usually you didn't eat too healthy and got something quick. So like fast food or places on campus that weren't the best for you. But I just remember senior year when we had the 3 meals at the stadium, you could pop in and get a little bit healthier of meals. And our nutritionist would be there throughout the day and just kind of check our plates and make sure we were getting enough vegetables and all that kind of stuff. So my senior year was a lot easier because it was kind of handed to us. As I got older and took it a little bit more seriously, I started going to the grocery store and getting healthy foods and cooking them, and so I could just bring them around campus throughout the day.
Yeah, I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit more, about how the athletic department got more involved just in athletes' diets, you know, during your time at Illinois. What was it like when you first stepped on campus as a freshman compared to, you know, what you described with those three full meals when you were a senior?
Yeah, definitely. Well, that first summer, we had all of our meals given to us. So that was kind of exciting for us, just having meals hot and ready for us to go. So as a freshman, you're just kind of enjoying that, but that was just in the summer. And then when you got to the dorms, and we moved to the one meal, so you quickly had to figure out how to eat healthy and all that kind of stuff. So I don't think we had a nutritionist my freshman year, so I think my sophomore year they hired a nutritionist to kind of just educate us on why it's important to eat breakfast in the morning and why you should never really be hungry or be starving throughout the day and stuff like that. So we really got educated after my freshman year, so that was good.
Yeah, what kind of things did you have to learn as you progressed through the program diet-wise? I mean, what were the biggest things that you took away from the things that the nutritionist and other athletic staff taught you about diet?
I mean, really for me personally, because really my entire life I've never really had much of an appetite in the morning. So really having breakfast be the most important meal of the day, which you hear all the time, but actually buying into that and just kind of get your day going and give you some energy throughout the day. And also just not skipping meals, because we had to weigh in every day. So in order to be at a healthy weight and really, if you want to lose weight or gain weight, it's best not to skip any meals. And especially, which was surprising for guys that needed to lose weight, that thought they could just not eat and eat one meal a day, but they would lose muscle and go down on the list in the weight room. But I'd say not skipping meals was definitely important. And just what you eat, stay away from the fried foods. And Chelsea, now Burkhart, was our nutritionist. And she would always say you want to have as much color on your plate as possible, like the greens, the broccoli and beans and corn and all that kind of stuff. So I thought that was one thing that stuck in my mind, having a really colorful plate.
How do you think the nutrition regimen set out by the team's nutritionist help you perform better on the field?
I think it helped a lot. Like I said, when I was younger, I didn't really know much about it. And as I got older, I really noticed a change and I got a lower body fat percentage as I got older, and I just felt like I was in better condition when we were in off-season conditioning and just obviously lifting weights, you get stronger. I think having a healthy diet was was probably the most important thing for that.
And do you feel that you eat differently now compared to when you first started college and even since you've graduated?
Yeah, I think I do. I think I changed drastically from when I first showed up to college to when I graduated. I think I just from the knowledge standpoint and knowing how fast food and that kind of stuff is not very good for you. But then now also just not having practice every day or mandatory workouts, and I'm not working out as nearly as much as I used to. I kind of have to watch what I eat a little bit more, which is hard, obviously, but in order to not be a large human being, I try and stay on top of it as much as I can.
Yeah, one final question for you, Riley. I'm curious if the diets you had as part of the football program, were they player-specific? I mean, along the lines of, was your offensive line eating the same types of foods that you guys as skilled position players were eating?
Yeah, we all had the same food. But specific guys, like if a lineman needed to gain weight, they would go into a weight room and get like an extra protein shake like throughout the day. The coaches, strength coach would just say, pop down the weight room, we'll have a protein shake for you. And then just guys that needed to lose weight, it'd be the same food, really. You just eat less of it and maybe eat some more vegetables and just have some more clean proteins and stuff like that.
Former University of Illinois quarterback Riley O'Toole joining us on the phone today to talk about sports nutrition. Riley, thanks a lot for your time today.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We heard the former player's perspective on sports nutrition, and coming up, we'll hear the dietitian nutritionist perspective, as we'll hear from Katie Knappenberger, the sports dietitian at Northwestern University, and we'll also check in from Illinois State University, Chris Carter, the director of sports nutrition at ISU. We'll hear from both of them coming up next on the 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Moline, filling in for Nyla Boodoo today. Let's bring in some nutrition experts now to talk about their experiences with student athletes. Katie Knappenberger is the sports dietitian at Northwestern University. She joins us on the phone from Evanston. Thanks for being with us, Katie.
Oh, thank you so much. It's good to be here.
Also joining us, Chris Carter. He's the director of sports nutrition at Illinois State University. He also serves as the athletic department's assistant director of sports performance. He's on the line from Normal. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Hi, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Katie, let's start with you. You've said that your approach is threefold when it comes to your work with student athletes. Can you explain those three parts for us?
Absolutely. Our performance nutrition program here at Northwestern kind of has a clinical component, which is our first component, and that entails kind of our one-on-one nutrition assessments with athletes, looking at labs, measuring body composition, doing, any medical nutrition therapy that we need to do with an athlete if they've come in with, genetically high cholesterol or genetically high blood pressure, or if the athlete needs kind of an individualized body composition change plan. I mean, all of those things kind of fall under our clinical arms. That would be the first one. Then our second area of our program is really our team education component. So that's, anything that we do to go out to our athletes on the court or on the field and do education on pre-fueling or refueling or hydration. We also do some cooking classes for our athletes that just moved off campus. We do grocery store tours. We have, some social media outlets and also a newsletter. And so all of those are kind of in our education arm. And then our final arm is our food service arm. So that's, the work that we do with all the chefs that prepare meals on campus and off campus for our athletes. And then our fueling station, which is kind of an athlete one-stop shop for anything that they may need to prepare themselves for a workout or to recover from a workout. So we take care of, managing our product inventory, bringing, new products in, and just kind of managing the basic business of that entity. So threefold, again, would be the clinical arm, the team education, and then the food service.
Chris, I think you were on the line for most of Riley O'Toole's interview with us. How familiar are some of his stories to what you hear every day from your student athletes?
I think a lot of it is what he brought up was just education and just being aware. And usually as athletes, they kind of just get that whole get by or just kind of go what they used to be doing. But listen to him talk, we can tell his involvement within the sports nutrition with down there at Champaign is that as he got more educated, I think he kind of bought into more of the importance of nutrition and refueling and fueling their bodies. So that's kind of what we see a lot around here at Illinois State. When I took over the position just as a director, so 4 years ago, just more of the education and just more of the awareness has probably been the biggest improvement that I feel that we can offer our students here at Illinois State.
Sure. And Chris, aside from nutrition, you're also a strength coach. How do those two jobs work hand in hand?
Sometimes great, sometimes not. I have a lot of undergrad students, and I have some actually graduate students in the nutrition department for athletics or for our school that come and help out. So they see me kind of doing two different things, and I'll be on the floor training our soccer team or be helping out with our football team or something on a sports performance side. But then I also got to flip the switch and kind of help with the students or answer any questions on the nutrition side for maybe the same team or different teams. And so I enjoy being both because I kind of started up through the whole strength conditioning process, but then kind of got grandfathered into more of just being in charge of anything nutrition-wise. So there's a lot of limitations that I can and can't do, but balancing both I enjoy, but sometimes it does get a little bit of a headache, but I enjoy both sides.
Sure, and Chris, I'm curious, what's the biggest transformation you've seen from a student athlete in your time at ISU?
Since the position changes?
Yeah.
I would say at Illinois State, the biggest thing on the nutrition side is we've been able to just offer more fuel. And that's kind of what Katie said on, I think, her third phase, is that our budget won't be as big as a lot of other schools, you know, Big Ten, but it's been able to provide our athletes just more fuel. It's okay. I enjoy it. I mean, it's helped a lot. And I think now it's kind of like the out of sight, out of mind. We have different fueling stations around campus at their study center and certain locker rooms, our weight room. So it's kind of more, it's in the athlete's face more. So they see it more. So even if they're grabbing a clip bar, an apple or a bagel between classes, I mean, the other options they would have skipped. So I think seeing them more proactive and taking advantage of those resources have been great. Some teams do body composition analysis or, you know, monitor body weight. That's kind of up to, you know, the strength coaches more on that end. But we have seen some small studies we've just done, just kind of just randomly snapshots of what they're at. But the other thing is I talk to more teams, and I don't do anything groundbreaking. Again, there's a lot of limitations I can do with education, but it's more of just making them aware, so they're asking more questions. It's just been more the forefront for them instead of just train and lift, practice, and that's it.
And Katie, I'm curious, how did the new rules about schools being able to offer more meals to student athletes, how has that helped you have a better handle on their nutrition? Katie, you still with us?
I'm sorry, I think you cut out. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Sorry about that. Let me ask that again.
I missed the end of the question. Sorry about that.
No problem. Phone lines can be a little persnickety. How did the new rules about schools being able to offer more meals to the student athletes, how did that help you have a better handle on their nutrition?
Yeah, I mean, deregulation was a real game changer for schools around the country. I mean, it just kind of lifted a lot of previous rules about what we could feed and when we could feed, to now just, you know, putting that responsibility really in the hands of the sports dietitian or the director of performance nutrition to do what's best for the athlete. And so cleared some things up with compliance. And you know, what's great is that, you know, you see a lot of schools really stepping forward with, you know, support, and whether it come directly from the athletic department or whether it come from a booster program. You know, people are really investing in helping our athletes fuel and recover for their health and performance. So, you know, the biggest change, I guess, is, you know, we've seen a lot more variety. We're able to accommodate a lot more of the athletes' needs, especially surrounding allergies and intolerances. And then you just see the university kind of coming together to really support this side of the athlete's health and wellness. So it's been fantastic.
And Katie, I'll ask this of both of you, but I'll start with you, Katie. Has that rule, has it made you have to stretch your budget a little bit on the nutrition side?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely got to get creative. You got to work with your marketing department, work with your community relations person, and it's really brought us all together for the common good. But yeah, I mean, if you take advantage of your community and really lean on the support of your athletic department, we're able to kind of stretch our budget to do the best we can for our athletes.
And Chris, kind of the same question for you. Illinois State's athletic budget not quite on the same level as Northwestern, as a Big Ten school. What kind of a budget impact has this new rule had on you?
Competition. So it actually, on our end, a lot of schools can kind of utilize what they have more. And we use a lot of donors and a lot of outside support just to kind of take some of the weight off of our athletic department. But with that being said, when the deregulation happened, our administration knew we had to do something more. And they kind of asked me what we feel that we can do. And I kind of just started low. And I said, based on how much we can get from, donors and support and what you guys are able to provide. But our athletic director even told me, he's like, we won't be able to give our athletes meals. We won't be able to do that. So what's the next best thing? So I kind of wrote up just a three-phase proposal, just certain budgets per year, and I kind of gave it to what Katie said, our marketing department, and see if we can kind of work our magic to try to get some money in to help kind of feed our athletes through our fueling stations and through our weight room. And it's allowed our administration to kind of put more priority into that, which has, of course, helped myself and our student-athletes.
Sure. Katie, back to you. Do you have any stories about student-athletes who have really struggled with nutrition?
I think that we get some athletes in as freshmen that come in with just varying levels of education, like Chris mentioned. And I think that, more of it is just not being aware that what they used to eat before their high school workouts was not going to be the fuel that got them through these new Division I Big Ten workouts. And so I've seen some freshmen kind of struggle to figure out what do they really need to fuel with in order to kind of make it through practice. We've seen some athletes come in and learn that they have a food allergy or learn that they have a food intolerance, and we've got, a staff in place to help them, creatively figure out how to fuel. But, with a lot of those struggles come the greatest success, because if we've brought in an athlete who is already this gifted to make it to this level and hasn't optimized their nutrition yet, if we can help them optimize that nutrition, it's an incredible performance edge for them. And those students that came in with struggles end up being our greatest successes.
Sure. And I'm curious, Katie, what are some of the lengths you've gone to help a student athlete?
We have definitely done individual meetings with them. We've definitely looked at, worked with our team physicians to look at lab work. We've looked at, body composition assessment when we need to. We also collaborate with, other entities that may have, helpful information for us. So we'll collaborate with the athletic trainers and figure out, what are they seeing from their end. We'll collaborate with our sports psychologists to see, what are they collaborating with on their end. So, I mean, with the resources that we have here at Northwestern, I mean, we can go to pretty great lengths to help our athletes succeed nutritionally.
And Chris, at Illinois State, knowing that the budget is a little bit different, what are some ways that you've really tried to reach out individually to some student athletes at ISU?
So what I typically do is I offer my services to all the coaches to try to talk or just get in front of their athletes and their teams at the beginning of the semester. So I just met with our cross-country team last night just for 20 minutes. One, introduce myself to a lot of new runners. And two, just because sometimes they see me as a strength coach because they might be working out at the same time I'm training a team. But I want them to try to look at me more as just the other side, the nutrition side, that they can ask questions. They can use me as a resource or go from there. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's fine. I was going to kind of follow up with that. Do you have athletes ever check in with you periodically just to ask what they should eat in a certain situation or if they're trying to train a certain way?
Yeah. Of course, certain sports. Education, too, is a big thing. But the big thing that I think Katie Pye does, too, is it's knowledge is key, but it's just that motivation factor. And I'm trying to get our student athletes to just be more motivated to be more proactive. And the ones that kind of build that courage to come ask me questions or that will take time out of their day. So, I mean, I meet with a lot of athletes individually, and as a lot of it's just coming in, check on, you know, the supplement thing, just kind of checking on a few, asking me some questions, which is great. But I usually start with team first and let them know the door's open. And then when it comes to individual, as a strength coach, I see them almost every day. So it's a little bit less informal just because I see them. But a lot of it's just giving them just that reminder piece of, okay, we just got done training, go get your, you know, post-training fuel. But then for the rest of the day, what's your mindset? Are you thinking about this? Are you worried about you have two tests the next, you know, 4 hours and not eating? So,
sure. Katie, what have you found in your experience maybe to be the best motivator for student athletes to actually follow some of the advice that they're being given?
Yeah, and I think really sitting down with those student athletes and forming a great relationship, you know, first to really get to know them, let them know that, you know, we're here to help. We absolutely care about them. And then to know that, you know, all of our student athletes are going to be motivated differently. You know, some of them are going to be motivated, you know, solely by performance on the field. You know, if we are doing a nutrition modification to enhance speed, then, you know, we are solely focused on speed, and that's the motivator because they know that if they get faster, then they, you know, could maybe earn a starting spot, or maybe they have a starting spot, but they're trying to pursue a professional career, and the one thing standing in their way is their speed or their weight or their whatever it might be. You know, some students are highly motivated, especially here at Northwestern, by academics. You know, so if we can also speak to the fact that if, you know, this particular nutrition modification will improve your concentration, will improve your test scores, will improve your, you know, just overall performance in the classroom, you know, that's another way that we can motivate our student athletes to, you know, to make a change. But Chris is absolutely correct, is that if you don't have that relationship and you don't form that with your athletes, you know, and really figure out what is the one thing that is going to motivate them to make this really, you know, might be tough change, you know, but yeah, so that's, you know, kind of our approach on motivating our athletes.
And sure, just time for one more question here, Katie. Have you had student athletes maybe make requests for certain foods at the training table, and how does that go over?
We have. We love our athletes to get involved. We ask for feedback frequently. You know, some of our athlete feedback recently has been to ask about, you know, why can't we eat some of these foods that my mom prepared at home? You know, my mom makes this. And so this coming week in our training table is Taste of Home Week. So every day of next week, we've picked a different state and we're featuring kind of different foods from that state. We found the states that most of our student athletes are from, the five most, and we're featuring some foods from there. So, you know, it's always a delicate balance, I guess, between, you know, delicious bomb and pop home-cooked meals and then also performance foods. So that's why, you know, we work really closely with our chefs to create foods that are going to enhance performance, but also
All right.
really great so that our athletes want to eat them.
Well, we'll have to end it there, but Katie Knappenberger, sports dietitian at Northwestern, and Chris Carter, director of sports nutrition at Illinois State, thank you so much for joining us on the 21st.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Moline, filling in for Nyla Boodoo.
In hand barbershop wall, saying Raggedy Ann doll. The TV was off but turned up loud. Everything something I couldn't do without.
That was a bit of The Fights playing a song off their new record, Bramble Patch Blues, that's coming out early next month. On Fridays, we talk to musicians and artists from across the state of Illinois, and today we continue exploring Illinois' creative culture. We're joined in studio today by The Fights. They're a five-piece country band from Urbana. They've been finishing up the recording of their second full-length album, and they're playing tomorrow night at the Pygmalion Festival in Champaign. We're joined by two members of the band now, Cole Rabinort and Clayton Deering. Cole and Clayton, thanks for joining us today.
Sure thing. Thanks for having us.
You guys have played the Pygmalion Festival before. Mm-hmm. You're here again this year. I'm curious. Do you guys feel kind of like you're a kind of a reliable mainstay kind of band here in the Central Illinois music scene now?
I don't really have a good idea of how others might view who we are or what we do. But I mean, it's been going on 4 years of being a band, and most of what we've done has played shows here locally in the Champaign-Urbana area. So, I mean, this is where the band started. It's where we're continuing to play and stay. So it is home for the band for sure.
Yeah, it should be a good night. There's always, seems to me, been kind of a relaxed sound and in nature to your band. You guys are all close friends. It doesn't look like you're, you know, trying to take this band full time, at least not for right now.
Yeah.
How does that differ maybe a little bit from some projects you've done in the past?
I guess this is the longest I've been in a band. I've played for a short time with a group that it was more of a traveling, touring act and felt more like a full-time thing. That being said, I can't say that I was nearly as invested in that one, as strange as that seems. Like, this is certainly the band that personally I've been most devoted to and that is the most personal project I've ever been a part of. It's just circumstances and situations of basically economy that keep us from doing it full time. I think we all would if we could. It's just not in the cards currently.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Clayton, from your perspective, you know, in The Fights, I think I said 4 years now you guys have been together. Just your thoughts on this group and kind of what it means
sure.
to you.
It's also the longest running band that I've been into. Been in bar bands before, and I'll say that this band has definitely been like the most challenging band and a band where you have to try to be real with yourself and like what you're trying to do and challenge yourself all the time to try to become better. So it never gets stale or old or anything.
Sure. You know, I introduced you guys as a country band. That term means a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm.
How do you approach that when people ask, you know, what kind of band you are? What do you tell them?
I think our answers have gotten shorter over the years because you realize you go off on a tangent trying to explain the history of alternative country music and not everyone cares. So you just say country, a country band, I think is what it feels like to me. I think you're right. It means a lot of different things to different people, but especially in a scene like the one that we're in here, we kind of stand out as because of the steel guitar and the, I don't know, kind of it's easy to pinpoint it and call it twangy or something like that. You know, it kind of and I'm totally fine with the C word. I'm okay with country. it's never offended me.
Sure. Clayton, I'm curious for you, as playing steel guitar dobro, who are some of your big influences on the instrument?
Oh, I don't know. When I started playing lap steel is what I mostly play with Fights right now. And when I started playing, I didn't really have a lot of lap steel heroes because it wasn't as, you know, it wasn't as big as pedal steel or anything. And then now that I've started playing dobro more often and been thankfully forced into learning it better, I'd say like Jerry Douglas is definitely somebody that I have a hard time not getting really into it whenever I watch him on YouTube or something. I've never seen him live. That's a dream, I guess. But and as far as pedal steel goes, you know, I was always turned on by New Riders of the Purple Sage. So Sneaky Pete has always been like a pretty great steel player in my opinion.
Yeah. How about you, Cole? Some big influences for you.
What I find most natural for me and keeps me busy is songwriting. So really just I like songwriters, people who use words in interesting ways and kind of just like create a mood with the words and then the chords that you put along with them to create the flow of the songs. Really just songwriters, anyone who cares about a song from start to finish, you know.
Speaking of songwriting, we're going to hear a song that you've written here, the title track from your upcoming album, Bramble Patch Blues.
Yeah.
I think it might be better if we just listen to it, and then we can talk about it a little more afterward.
Sure, yeah.
Ready?
Spend my morning in a bramble patch, sun and the world's weight hot and heavy on my back, picking berries and pulling weeds for minimum wage and cash. And every time I get pricked with that rasp, I realize there's work left to do. So much so that by noon, them little lines of blood, they've been drawing up the pictures of my thoughts. Yeah, they got art scrawled all up and down my arms. Yeah, they run just like sweat and red chalk. And one looks like the Son of God, another's in the shape of a guitar. Biggest one, it's a woman with a child. And I'm not sure what it all means, but I'd like to think I believe that somewhere, something or someone is waiting for me. No, I'm not sure what it all means, but I'd like to think I believe that somewhere, something or someone is waiting for me.
Bramble Patch Blues, a title track off the Fight's upcoming album. It'll be out in early October. And Cole, just listening to the lyrics in that song, I understand you spent quite a bit of time out in fields and vineyards here in central Illinois.
Yeah.
Is that kind of where this song came into your head?
It did, yeah. I think most of the songs on this upcoming record actually were either conceived or just written in my head during the days of working alone in a field. You have a lot of time to think, and my brain being what it is, I kind of just think about these ideas and these songs and sometimes just, you know, write a song in my head and then go home and pick up my guitar and put chords to it. but this song is kind of in summation, like, I think, kind of just that overarching feeling of being at work and, you know, your hands are busy, but your mind is elsewhere, and kind of trying to understand what it is that I'm doing and how I got to where I am and where I want to go from here, I guess.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And Clayton, from your perspective, when Cole brings a song idea in like this, how do you and the rest of the band really take that idea and turn it into, you know, a full-fledged song with everybody's contribution?
I think how we've kind of done it in the past, for anyone who brings a song to the table for the Fights, is we typically listen to it and hear it out, and then I think the mindset behind all of it is, what can we add to the song already that's like inherently there or is asking to be there? There's a lot of thought that goes into it too, and a lot of feeling it out and playing it out and trying different things. But I think the underlying or overarching theme is that the song is already pretty good by itself, standalone, you know.
Yeah, I understand you guys recorded your first album, Cole, in your grandfather's basement?
On his a farmhouse.
Oh, his farmhouse. Okay.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, so, and I guess it's the latest album that was in your basement.
My basement.
Yeah, okay.
Still.
That's right. So, yeah. So tell us a little bit about some of these interesting recording locations and why have they worked so well for you?
I think you make do with what you've got and you have access to. A few years ago, our first release was a 5-song EP, and we did that in a studio proper, you know. And then through that, really got to know the engineer, Aaron McAllister, who's an engineer here in town. Well, we got along with him really well, and he kind of understood the sound that we were going for and had a good ear for it. And we tricked him in then to going down to the farm with us for that last record. He's a good-natured person with a patience for us and our ideas. He was willing to turn a 100-year-old farmhouse into a room where we're supposed to make drums sound good and all of that. I think it's nice to try a different approach every time, especially if you're constantly wanting to evolve and if you're curious. Like, I wonder what it would sound like if we did it somewhere else, you know? And that's kind of what we have ended up doing on this time around. We're spending a lot more time on fussing over the details. Like the EP and our last record, we're very much kind of just like get them done as quick as we can, playing as much live as we can. And, you know, while we enjoy those records for what they are and how they represent us at that time, I think that we've continuing to grow and just wanted to give our songs a chance to like be refined a little bit more this time around, not just leave it up to a live performance, but really give each of us the chance to go over it as many times as we'd like to really put something down that that we're proud of, you know.
Well, guys, I think we've got time for one more song, and mm-hmm. I understand we'll hear another one from the upcoming album, right?
That's right, yep.
And what's the title of this one?
It's All Right.
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
Well, it's all right. You don't need to speak a word. I'll ask for nothing. No, I don't want nothing in return. But I'll stay here if you'll have me all night long. For I just wanted to sing you a song. Not for radio or a TV show or some hot new trending blog. No, I just wanted to sing you a song.
That's the Urbana band The Fights sharing some music with us from their new album, Bramble Patch Blues. That's all the time we have for today. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Just search for The 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. All of those links and every other way to contact us via phone, email, or social media is at our website, 21stshow.org. We're produced by Christine Herman, Philip Kisabika, and Sean Newman. Technical direction comes from Jason Croft with help from Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our news director. And special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Brian Moline, and for Nyla Boodoo, The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.